Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude!
Hey! What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy, Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line you, bunch of dudes. Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house.
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude and Boston College 24/7. Season 3, Special Edition 2019 Season Preview Episode. After a long off-season, the Mats are officially back on air to gear you up for the return of college football. It's been a busy 7 months on the Heights since the notoriously canceled First Responders Bowl, as the Eagles lost one of the most talented senior classes in history and made key changes at both coordinator positions. But with Heisman contender A.J. Dillon back to full health for his junior season, anything can happen this year in a wide-open ACC. On today's episode, we'll break down the key Eagles coming back in 2019, talk dude or pood, head into the courtroom for a special Duteus Corpus ACC preview edition, and announce the official Lot of Dudes season prediction. Matt, welcome back.
Matt, it is so good to be back. This is just the best time of year. I'm so excited for football to be back. Summer camp officially opens up this week, Friday, I believe. Summer camp at the Fish, where guys become dudes. Optimism is running really high in the 4th and Dude headquarters right now. We are feeling so good about what the next 4 months will deliver to us.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a bit of a different feel this year compared to last year. We'll get into sort of how the hype machine has played out, or lack thereof. But people forget, Matt, A.J. Dillon's still on this football team. We still got, you know, Anthony Brown coming into his own. We got some key changes that were made in the offseason. But at the end of the day, this is a team of dudes. And I think a lot of people don't know what's going to hit them this year.
I completely agree. So before we get started, some very exciting updates in the world of the Lot of Dudes podcast. We are thrilled to announce our latest partnership with our good friends over at Armchair All-Americans. So the guys over there are building an awesome network of sports podcasts all across professional college teams all throughout the country. There are some super talented and popular podcasts under their umbrella, and we are absolutely psyched to be a part of it. And Matt, get this. So for the first time in a lot of dudes history, we have teamed up with a few awesome companies for some big time sponsors. Needless to say, the koozie budget will be in full force this coming year. So Brighton, be on the lookout for that. And it all starts with our good friends over at MyBookie. Matt, a new football season is right around the corner, which brings with it a full slate of changes. In our backyard alone, we've got a new look offensive line, overhauled secondary. Lindstrom will be protecting Matty Ice. Tommy 12-inch is poised to become a Buffalo legend. The list goes on and on. But a few things have stayed constant. Tony Touchdowns is still an all-ACC caliber quarterback. A.J. Dillon still loves applesauce. And I am still betting the full slate of games exclusively with MyBookie. MyBookie is the place to bet on football every weekend. They offer better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. This year, they're hosting the first ever online super contest. First place is guaranteed at least $100,000. Just think about how many koozies that would buy you on Brighton, and it only costs $100 to enter. All you got to do is pick 5 NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. We would only recommend a service to our fellow dudes that's been good to us. That's why MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. They've got live in-game betting on every NFL game, the most rewarding player perks in the businesses. And for all you fantasy nerds out there, you can bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now with us and get $200 in free bets. Use promo code DUDE to activate the offer. That's right, we have our own promo code. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And use our promo code DUDE. That's just spelled D-U-D-E when creating your account to claim the bonus. Bet, win, get paid. MyBookie. Matt, we are officially in the major leagues now, and it feels really good. First question, I guess, for you would be, what are you going to do with all of the money you win from betting exclusively on the birds on MyBookie in 2019?
Yeah, Matt, it's a good question. I already put my bet down. BC getting 2.5 against Virginia Tech. What an absolute steal. It's honestly free money. No, I'll tell you what, if you've been with us since, 2017, since we started this, you know, we said we never sell out for ads. Hey guys, guess what? We sold out.
I mean, the koozies just don't pay for themselves is kind of the bottom line.
And everyone forgets that, but no, it's going to be a fun ride, this season with my bookie, with Armchair, with everyone. So welcome aboard. If you're new to the program, it's pretty straightforward. We are Boston College Football's premier podcast in the industry. Slightly biased. You're not going to come here for cold hard facts necessarily, but you will come for the fan perspective, and we'll try to convince you why this team will win. And I'll save it for the season prediction. Why this team will contend for the ACC championship?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more on board. I'm so excited for what this team has in store. Before we kind of run around and do our roster preview and kind of brief game by game breakdown, look around the ACC. I think we got to give a throwback to basically where our roots and where we came from, and a good old fashioned round of Dude or Pood.
That's right, and it's one of the best segments out there. Pretty straightforward. You guys, Dude is something good that happened. Pood is something bad that happened.
Pretty straightforward, right? I mean, I feel like we have some segments that get a little bit confusing, but this one feels to me like if you were just listening for the first time, you would be able to pick that up.
Right. Duteus corpus, you kind of have to explain that one,
fair.
Right?
I think you need a law degree.
That's a good point. So I'll just get right into my dude. How's that, Matt?
Let's do it.
All right. So I touched on it a little bit, but my dude this year, Matt, and it's in contrast to last year where BC was the popular dark horse pick. You know, you had AJ Dillon that sort of put BC on the map in the second half of 2017. So it was the trendy pick to put Boston College in the way the schedule lined up and everything, that not only were they going to, you know, have success in the ACC, but many pundits were saying that this was the team that was going to challenge Clemson. Obviously, we know how that ended up, right? So, you know, we were gifted sort of a number 23 ranking after beating UMass, Holy Cross, and Wake last year, and then failed to show up against Purdue, and never really got off the plane. Coach Addazio even admitted that we were sort of reading our press clippings. We weren't really prepared to take on a team like Purdue on the road, et cetera, et cetera. This year, there's absolutely none of that. There's really no preseason accolades outside of Dillon. And even that's sort of, you know, half-assed. You know, everyone's talking about Travis Etienne as the best running back in the ACC. Ben Petrullo's gotten a little bit of accolades, but my dude, to bring it full circle here, Matt, my dude is the lack of hype, which is ironic, right? Usually you want some hype preseason, but not this team. You know, BC makes its living recruiting the overlooked guys that want to prove the haters wrong. Being an underdog is a far better mentality than you know, the false hype that we saw last year. So, you know, they were picked number 5 in sort of a soft Atlantic in the ACC this year. So I'm excited for these guys to show the country, you know, what they can do and why they're a heck of a lot better than number 5 in the ACC.
Yeah, and we'll get into it when we break into the courtroom. But I think the bottom line is that nobody in the media or really, you know, any fan bases have any idea what to expect out of the ACC Atlantic, really beyond Clemson at the top and Louisville at the bottom. I think you could make a legitimate case for any order out of the next, whatever it is, 5 teams and where they're going to finish there. So I'm kind of with you that I like that. A, it's an open race, and B, no one is necessarily expecting anything out of us, because I think that, I mean, when you have a target on your back, it's hard. When you're ranked and you go into Purdue, that's a tough environment to play versus if we were, you know, 1-2 and you know, not getting any votes. I think teams step up when you know, a good team comes to town. So if we kind of have an even playing field, I'm all for that. I'm going to go slightly off the field, though still kind of in the medium market for my dude. I think everyone knows that I am notoriously the tougher one on Coach Addazio. I think especially last year, he had a lot of criticism thrown his way, specifically from, you know, my side of the podcast. And I do think a lot of it was warranted, but it's a new season. He is our guy, and we're excited to you know, fight behind him over the coming, you know, couple months. But my standout performance every year, and I think the thing that he is best at, is his media day performance. Obviously, he's a great speaker. He's always great on ESPN. He's very eloquent. He's very, you know, fiery and good to listen to. But I'm talking specifically more about his consistent beatdown of the rest of the ACC coaches when it comes to his tan. He has spent basically the last...
His tan.
Yeah, his tan, just to be clear. He has spent the last 4 months on the beaches of Dennis on Cape Cod, just absolutely soaking up the sun. I imagine a lot of smoked meats kind of on the beach there, maybe during the golden hour. A couple glasses of the vino and going back to kind of the old Italian dinners and things like that. He shows up in Charlotte, and while everyone else has been, you know, hiding under their desk in their office, Adazio just looks like a million bucks. This year, he went with a pink suit, which I thought complemented the golden brown crisp just absolutely perfectly. But he's a guy that walks in there and knows that he's the alpha when he steps foot in that room, even in a room that includes guys like Dabo Sweeney and, you know, some other big time coaches. So, again, for as hard as I've been on Adazio, I do think he deserves a lot of credit, specifically as it pertains to that field. So that's my dude. I think it's I want to start off on a good note with Adazio this year and hope to carry that through with some positive vibes throughout the season.
Matt, I appreciate that because you're coming from a position of, sort of a truce, right? So
correct.
For those of you guys that are new, I'm probably a little too much in on Coach Adazio. He's my favorite guy, and a lot of it is because of all the off-the-field nonsense. He's just the ultimate football coach, and all he needs is just to be a little bit better at actually coaching football, and otherwise he would be the greatest coach of all time, in my opinion.
And I don't think that's too much to ask, Matt. I really don't.
No, exactly. No, but agree. He walked into media day, and you know, he's on, you know, he has the connection to Bristol, obviously, too. So when he shows up on TV, he blows the rest of those guys. And, you know, you're dealing with Dabo Sweeney and Dave Dorn and guys that probably, you know, shouldn't be in front of a camera anyway. But that's our football coach, and all.
Dave Dorn, and we'll obviously get to it in a couple weeks, but he's just like the absolute worst. I know we kind of harp on this every year, but that guy just absolutely sucks, you know, from every aspect that you could possibly come up with.
Agreed. I'm with you, Matt. I look forward just to really lashing out at NC State, because that's, to me, and we'll get into it, but that's a game we need to win. And I look forward to drumming up some controversy before that game to get the guys motivated for that one. Matt, I'm going to jump into my pood real quick, all right? So, obviously, we lost a ton of talent from last year's senior class. It was probably among the best we've ever seen. And we had as many as, I don't know, 8 to 10 guys that absolutely could have and probably should have been drafted. And my pood in general is just kind of how the draft ended up shaking out. You know, on the day of, we started out pretty hot with Lindstrom going, I think, 14 overall to the Falcons. We had Allen and Harris going in the third. So we were starting out pretty hot. And then there was really nothing after that. Outside of Tommy Sweeney going in the seventh. You left studs like Hamp, Lucas Dennis, Jeff Smith, Mikey Walker, Wyatt Ray, Strahan. All those guys went undrafted, which was unfortunate to see. And you know, I really thought that a lot of those guys, you know, had what it took to make it to the next level. And it's not to say they won't. A lot of them are showing their stuff in camp, and a lot of them will make teams and practice squads, etc. But I was hoping that would go a little bit better. And then even in the NBA draft, which I didn't see coming because I love Kai Bowman, I really thought he was going to get drafted. Although he had some weird thing going on with Golden State that was like potentially,
I don't know what's going on there, to be honest.
Potentially, yeah, tampering. I don't really know, Matt. But I guess, you know, so it's a poot in that, you know, it would have been great to have, you know, like 8 guys drafted. It would have been cool to say that. And, you know, it's big for recruiting and all that. But I guess also more importantly for the underclassmen, and it's less applicable to a guy like Kai Bowman who was gone no matter what. But like Hamp Cheevers, right? He obviously had a breakout campaign, the Hamp-Cheevers Accord. Have you ever heard of it, Matt?
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that truce.
Yeah, so you know, obviously he decides to go pro after his junior year. He has a year of eligibility left, and it seems to me it's just sort of nonsensical why, if he goes undrafted, why he can't come back and get his degree and, you know, yeah, line up at corner for BC again this year. It seems like a no-brainer. I think it's one of those rules, and I'm not a big NCAA hater, like pay the guys, whatever. NCAA, I think, is doing a fine job. I love college football as it is. Don't change anything.
So just for the record, are you taking a stand of your anti-paying the
players?
No,
because that's going to...
You're going to bury in that lead?
That won't look great, probably, for our sponsors. No, but what I'm saying is I don't often get on my soapbox in opposition to the NCAA, but in this case, it's an easy case where, hey, guys... Let the guys that don't get drafted come back to school, get the degree, be, you know, playmakers, everyone wins, and then the NFL will be there next year, right?
Hey, while you're negotiating that, do you mind having them put through the college video game again?
Yeah, well, I'm there, Matt. I'll see what I can do about that.
Thank you.
I'll do my best.
If we're going to be on site, we might as well, you know, kind of have a dual purpose meeting there. But I'm with you. I think Hamp was really, for me, the sour note of the weekend. He was so incredibly talented. And look, I get it. Like there's so many different decisions that go into declaring for the draft. Obviously it's hard to turn down the money that seems there. You know, you think about the secondary as a whole this year, obviously they were, we're losing a lot of guys. So, you know, if you're in his perspective, if you're a very strong guy and a very strong secondary, statistically, you'll probably have a better year than, you know, trying to be the best guy on an otherwise kind of weak secondary. So I completely get it, but I'm with you. I think you shouldn't be penalized for, you know, basically shooting your shot and trying to do what the end goal is for 99% of the players in college football. So definitely unfortunate there. I'm definitely with you. For my pood, I'm going to go continue out. You know, I have my dude at media day. I'm going to do the same for my pood as well. So AJ Dillon, we all know for a while now, he's been big in the applesauce game. He's got some, you know, connections with Mott's and some other, the bigger companies. So two issues here that I want to bring up. One, I have it's like a 1% fear. But an awful scandal that we really don't need to deal with would be some sort of inappropriate sponsorship scandal with Mott's, for example. Like, I don't know what the rules are, but let's say, for example, Mott's sends him thousands upon thousands of dollars of applesauce, which if you follow him on Instagram, it kind of seems like he's eating that much applesauce. So I don't know where he's getting it all. But I think that's the last thing that this season needs, is to kind of get derailed before we get started. And then the second piece of that is his take on putting applesauce on mac and cheese. Just a terrible opinion. He came out with that on Media Day. I think we all know that I'm of the opinion that, you know, no press is bad press, and making headlines is, you know, often a good thing. But in this case, that's just not what we needed, again, coming into this year. I think that, you know, we want to have a cohesive locker room, and that's kind of an issue that I could really see dividing, you know, players amongst different groups.
Yeah, and I'm a mac and cheese guy, and I am a...
Who isn't?
Right. And I am an applesauce guy, which surprises people because I'm not a big fruit or vegetable guy, but I'll do a little bit of applesauce. I will not do them together. I will say AJ Dillon's probably the one guy that can get away with saying something like that and without being like arrested for a pre-crime situation.
Correct.
But yeah, I don't know which of those is worse, Matt, whether it's illegally embezzling free applesauce leading to an NCAA investigation, or what he does with it thereafter. I don't know what. Correct. I'm more concerned about.
Yeah, no, I think those are definitely both valid. I'm going to toss in another poot as well quickly here, because I don't think we've been on the mic over the course of the summer. Really, since the Jim Christian extension or lack of firing was announced. We may have touched on it earlier in the spring, but I do want to revisit our relationship with Martin Jarmond. Everyone knows Martin is our best internet friend, or at least was at one point. I'm not really sure where things stand. We went after him pretty hard at the Jim Christian extension because, look, I think that you and I, for the first time in a long time, were on the same page with the fate of our head coaches, and we just definitely thought it was time to make a change. The excuses continue to pile up. This was, you know, four or five of pathetic results despite great talent, a couple NBA players, et cetera.
16-82 or something ridiculous.
Correct.
Like that.
I mean, it's almost impossible to be as bad in terms of the win and loss column as JC has been over his tenure here. So when it was announced and he came out with that ridiculous article of saying, oh no, we're going to invest in the program by building a new nutrition station in Conte Forum, we went after Martin pretty hard, and I think, you know, rightly so. Since then, I think looking back and kind of tempering our emotions, and, you know, look, sometimes it takes the big man to apologize, and I guess today we will be those big men. But I think we know the powers that be at Boston College. They go so high up the rung. This wasn't his call 100%. He was obviously getting pressure from other sources, whether that was not the right budget to find the next head coach from Leahy, or Leahy just flat out not wanting to eat the buyout, etc. So I want to extend a little bit of an olive branch here and say, look, Martin, you are the face of the athletic program, and like any you know, executive or leader in management, you're going to be blamed when things go wrong. So I don't want to necessarily say we were in the wrong for being upset with you, but as our former best friend, I really would like to get back to a place of happiness. We both go to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning. I think that's a unifying topic that we can get behind. But, you know, overall, when you lose a friend, it kind of just eats at you. So I've been really looking forward to the opportunity to apologize and get back on level terms for quite some time now.
Yeah, the whole point, and you touched on it, the whole point of going to the gym at 6 a.m. is so you can tell people about it. So that
correct.
Didn't get by me, just to let you know.
Correct. Well, specifically Martin Jarmond at this particular juncture. I want him to know that while he's getting better, I also am getting better. While, you know, the rest of everyone else sleeps.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. You know, we'd like to be a basketball podcast as well. You know, as big, you know, growing up BC fan, Jared Dudley, Sean Marshall, Tyrese Rice, et cetera, were all, you know, big heroes of mine. And I used to care way more about basketball than football, believe it or not. But it's just, I'm so apathetic at this point to the Jim Christian experience. You know, obviously we lost Kai. We don't have a lot going on.
Well, I'll say, I mean, again, we got, and I feel like we do this every year. Christian does do well in the transfer market. He got the guy who started at Duke who, you know, which is obviously on talent alone is exciting. Those statistics.
Yeah, there's a reason
he's 3 years
transferred to four
around.
Programs in 3 years.
Correct. And then we got the guy from Providence who, same thing, was a stud coming out of high school, was a huge recruit for Providence. Never really flourished, but the story is that his younger brother is I think a 5-star, if not a very high 4-star from Connecticut. And, you know, we're saying basically this will be a huge in potentially for his recruitment to BC. So, you know, things definitely look up. And I don't know if it's just the nutrition station's fault, if that's kind of the answer and the reason that we're finally getting good recruits. But look, I mean, I hope that this decision, I hope that we will eventually be proven wrong when we said it would have been the right idea to fire Christian. I'm not sold, but, you know, I guess we'll see what happens. But long story short, Martin, we miss you. Please let us know what we can do to be friends again. He did not respond to my wedding invitation, by the way.
Oh.
I don't know if he's responded to yours yet, but so that hurt my feelings a little bit. But I mean, look, friends fight. You and I have obviously had our fights in the past, you know, specifically over the fate of Steve Adazio. So this is certainly not uncharted waters. And if I know Martin like I think I do, I do feel like we'll come out of this tighter than we were before.
That's funny. And last thing on basketball, because I do want to move on to a real sport that we actually have a shot at. You know, he caught so much heat for not firing Daz. I thought that firing Christian, especially with the way we limped through the end of the season.
Completely.
There was no way he was going to keep Christian and live to tell the tale, right? Which makes what you said, you know, a lot more logical that it's not coming from him. You know, it's coming from Leahy, which obviously sucks. And our hope was that he was going to be able to be the guy that could get past that barrier. And, you know, be the guy that could stand up to Leahy or whoever that dynamic works. Right. But at the end of the day, I think you're right. He didn't have the authority to make the move he wanted to, especially because he's a basketball guy and he wants to right the ship. So,
correct.
All right. Anyway, so Matt, next up here, let's talk football. Let's talk about who's gone, who's coming back, what the key units are. Obviously, we got to start with your boy, Anthony Brown. Do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, so I know we're going to get into breakout dude of the year in a little bit. So spoiler alert, he's going to be mine, which I know you're going to, you know, it's a little bit of a contentious pick that you're going to probably have a problem
no,
with.
No. I have an open mind this year, Matt. So
okay.
Well, why don't you just get to it and then I'll chime in as needed. How's that?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, if we want to talk breakout dude of the year, I'm going to obviously go with Anthony Brown. I want to officially announce my position as the head conductor of the Tony Touchdowns hype train. Get on board now because it is going to get very full on this train by, I'd say, like week one. I think he's going to have a huge performance against Vatek. But I legitimately think that he is going to show up as a tier one quarterback in the country. I think a top two quarterback in the ACC. You could flip him or Lawrence, honestly. I think they're both going to be competing for you know, the best arm in the conference. If we look at his stats from last year, and I think that, again, because the record didn't always look the way that, you know, we wanted it to, and there were definitely some inconsistencies in the offense, there's no question about that. He definitely showed a lot of areas where he could improve. But statistically, he had basically a top five BC season for a quarterback from pretty much any metric that you want to look at. Specifically, had the second most touchdowns for a BC sophomore, highest single game passer rating in the history of the program. The weight game last year was statistically one of the best games in the country, you know, including any of Tua or Lawrence's performance. 304 yards, 5 touchdowns, first 300 by 5 game for a BC quarterback since Matty Ice. We've seen what he can do, and we've seen his flashes of brilliance. Again, Wake being a great example, but he also looked awesome against Vatek. And really for a lot of the portion of the you know, Florida State game. What he has not had is a full healthy offseason as a starter. Obviously, after the freshman campaign his redshirt freshman campaign where he tore the ACL late in the year, he didn't really start practicing until about this time last year. So missed all of spring camp and really was pretty gun shy for the rest of the summer. And even the early weeks, you could tell with the play calls, they weren't, you know, roll him out of the pocket. They were being very conservative. So I think giving him now a full, at this point, it's been basically, 18 months or more than that of a healthy ACL. You know, I really expect huge things out of his development. He does have more maturity. Dylan's his roommate now, which is just probably the first ever roommate combination that is going to win two Heismans. You and I, Matt, were roommates at one point, and we did have some good athletic accolades, a couple mugs between the two of us, I believe, but not at this level. But Dylan keeps talking about his maturity and how he's, you know, the first in the morning, the last out at night. I really think he's ready to be a leader on this team, and he's going to blow up the ACC and become a household name over the course of, you know, 12 weeks this fall. I think we look at, you know, the receiving core. He's got Kobe White, who's a stud. AJ has apparently been catching balls out of the backfield, which will open up so much throughout the rest of the passing game, as well just AJ's running game. So, and with Bajakian as the new coordinator, which we'll touch on, which is, you know, traditionally a throw-heavy guy, I think really the sky is legitimately the limit for Tony Touchdowns this year. And, yeah, I mean, I'm fully driving this train, and I hope that you will – get on board sooner than later.
Yeah, no, I believe in that. I'd like to. You know, we're all on the same team here. AB is the guy, right? He's got to be the guy this year. Obviously, the concern is, and we say it all the time, but it's Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know who's going to show up, is it? And it seems like to me every game against Wake, who was just a horrible defensive team by any metric, we saw. You think about the first half of NC State. Remember, we were down there for that. First half of Virginia Tech. First half of Florida State. There's sort of a trend here going on. The whole game against Purdue. It seems like that's more AB than otherwise. And I'd love for him to prove me wrong. But he does have a fair amount of issues that, you know, could be fixable. And I'm glad we brought in Bajakian, who's a, you know, potential quarterback whisperer, to help fix these. But, you know, he doesn't go through his progressions. He stares down his primary receivers. He underthrows the ball. He's got accuracy issues. All those, I think, are well documented. I don't want to pile on here, but it goes without saying he is obviously the missing link. We know what A.J. Dillon can do. We know that A.J. Dillon is going to have the defense's attention. Can A.B., with Bajakian's help, make defenses pay when they throw 8 to 9 guys in the box? That's the key question for this season. You know, I think that Bajakian should be the guy, right? Everywhere he's gone, he's sort of been, you know, great at QB development. It's exactly what this team needs. So, that really is the missing link on the offense. You touched on Kobe. I think he could be a top five receiver in the ACC if him and AB can get on the same page. He's certainly shown flashes. And, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I do want to say this, and I don't want you to get mad at me because
I'm going to.
We have a very talented quarterback room. All right. And depending on what we see out of AB early on, no question, he's the starter, right? No question. But if we see what we saw last year at certain points, against Purdue and against the first half of NC State, et cetera, I'm just saying, there's other talented guys in that quarterback room
Are you trying to make me angry? You have had some atrocious takes over the 2 years that we've had. That is legitimately one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life. And this is no gas to the rest of the quarterback. Sam Johnson will be a great ACC quarterback one day. But he is 19 years old. He is skinnier than me. And I'm, as everyone knows, a very, you know, in shape, thin guy.
All right,
we do not have talent. Who is the guy?
I mean, so
I know your Andover guy, EJ Perry, is no longer in the picture. So sorry about
Matt
that.
Matt Valici.
You want to bring Troy Flutie back?
Matt Valici is actually a stud quarterback, one of the best players in the state of New York last year. He redshirted last year, had a great spring game. He's 6'5". He's an absolute unit.
Can we go historically your spring game MVPs? Like, I would love to get a math trend
there is an inverse ratio to spring game performance and correct. Actual performance. That is true. I'll give you that. I'm just saying, let's not have, you know, the stubborn mindset that there's only one guy that can do that when you have all these other 3 and 4 stars in the QB room. This is Dylan's last year. Let's throw the best guy for the job at it. I think it's AB, Matt. I'm agreeing that it's AB.
You're goddamn right it is. You're goddamn right it is.
But if it's not, then let's find someone that can.
But it's not going to be.
I don't know how to do that many double negatives.
All right, here is my rule. When Tony Touchdowns is on stage at Radio City in December collecting his Heisman, you do not get to be excited about that night. Fair enough?
I don't think what I'm saying is that controversial. All I'm saying is have an open mind, play the best guy. This is Dylan's last year.
Yeah, we are going to do that. We are going to play the best
guy
for 12 games
this year.
We're
saying the same thing.
I don't think we are, but okay, continue.
I think you touched on it, right? So that's sort of the QB position. We don't really have to touch on AJ, right? I mean, AJ's AJ. He will be, if he can stay healthy, he will be on stage at the Heisman in December. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. He finished fourth in the ACC in rushing yards last year, despite playing on one leg. And you go back to what he did in 2017. I mean, when he was fully healthy, those stats are just absolutely absurd. If he can get anywhere close to where he was in 2017, and it sounds like he's fully healthy, you know, we're looking at a pretty special year.
Yeah.
And
the other thing, I want to mention on him as well too is just his maturity. We talked about it with Brown as well, but there was an article that Pete Thamel put out a week ago or so that was basically talking about his mindset. And now he said coming into last year, you know, he was a little bit high on himself and, you know, reading the press clippings about an incredible freshman year that he had. And then at the same time, Brian White says he was trying to do a little bit too much in some of the run game, specifically, the run that got him hurt. Sometimes you just got to follow your blockers and know kind of when to go down. So he's looking at the game from a much smarter approach, it sounds like, this year, really taking his preparation seriously, you know, mentally, physically, et cetera. I think we're going to see a huge maturation from him, from last year to now, it really in every aspect, again, size, speed, mindset, et cetera. So I, like you said, it's a given that he's going to be the monster and we're going to kind of roll as he does. But, I'll say behind him too, and I'm not anywhere near your horrible Anthony Brown take. I'm just saying, for giving him reps here and there, like we do have a very strong running back room. So it's nice to be able to get someone in on, second or third down if we need to give him a breather. And, I don't think we want to run him 50 times a game. I think we did that for the first couple games last year, which, maybe did cause some fatigue. So we got, JV and Dane has Heisman blood in his body. Obviously, Levy is great. Garwo is a blue chip recruit. Bailey is a legitimate bowling ball. So, I think the run game is for a reason ranked as like consistently in the top five throughout the country, regardless of, who you look at, Phil Steele, David Hale, et cetera. So ton to be excited about.
Yeah, that. I'm good with that take, Matt. I agree that running him 40 times isn't necessarily the best thing to do. However, I do want him to have the football as often as possible, because I think that's going to lead to the most amount of points for this Boston College team. But I do think it's a fair point to say, all right, let's tone it down a little bit. Let's get Glines and Levy some touches. David Bailey's a stud, goal line back. And then, hopefully I don't have to dip into the Garwo situation this
correct.
Year.
But, yeah, let's save that as much
but,
as we can.
But right? Yeah, I mean, he's obviously has the raw talent, the tenacity, the power, agility, decision-making. The list goes on. He doesn't fumble, although I probably just jinxed him.
Come on,
man. It
really?
Gets to the point where he's largely considered probably the top three back in the country, which offends me. If he's not number one, it's right. Stupid. And Jonathan Taylor right. From Wisconsin and ETN from Clemson obviously get a ton of hype. But give me Dylan any day of the week. He could just have one of the best all-time seasons this year. Not breaking news, but it's a good segue. Hopefully our offensive line obviously is, obviously we lost Lindstrom. We lost some guys. But if we have a solid offensive line and AJ is healthy, it could absolutely be a record-breaking year across the board for our running game.
Correct. Yeah. And I think, looking at the O-line, I'm not nearly as down on it as I think a lot of people are. I think a lot of people just see it as we lost Lindstrom and we did lose a couple other, key pieces, Baker as well, who Baker, by the way, is like a stud now. If you saw his, there was a picture of him at like spring camp, basically from the end of the season, he's cut like 300 pounds.
Oh yeah.
Looks like
that's, I love that.
Yeah,
when offensive
looks
linemen,
like a statue these days.
When they hang him up and they join the civilian world as normal looking people.
Correct. Not exactly a ringing endorsement of the college O-line diet, but here we are. But look, we got our guy Petrula, fan of the program. He is getting all ACC votes. John Phillips is also an all ACC caliber lineman. The younger Lindstrom, again, he's got NFL caliber blood running through his body. Also great food reviews on Instagram for all the young kids out there. I think they're all going to be ready to jump in and really take control of this line. This is now, again, Petrula's third year on the squad, and really he's going to own this unit and I think do a great job with that. We always reload on the offensive line. I think Dazio, to his credit, does a couple things really well, and rebuilding the offensive line is absolutely one of them. He's an offensive line guy. That's where he comes from, so no reason for that to change here. David Hale has this as the second best offensive line unit in the conference, if that's something you go by. And then, like you said, Tyler Vrabel, coach's son, so he plays the game the right way. I think overall I am not overly concerned with a relatively youthful or at least relatively, not super experienced offensive line coming into this next
year. Yeah, they got some grad transfers too, so they do have, a little bit of elder statesman from that standpoint. Petrula is statistically one of the best linemen in the country. He'll play on Sundays for sure. And it's also just difficult to predict how the line's going to shake out until you see it. We're wrong about it every year. I remember in 2017, actually, when Petrula got thrown in there at center, I think we're like, "Oh, we're screwed!"
Right.
And they looked the best that
right.
they ever had. So you never know what's going to happen, but historically, that's not a concern for us. So I think for the most part, right, we know what our offense is going to look like. Obviously, we lost some skill players when you talk about Tommy Sweeney, Jeff Smith, Mikey Walker, that we're going to have to replace. And going back to Bajakian, people don't realize this, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had the best passing offense in the NFL last year, which is hard to believe, but you need someone to step up, and we have a slew of young guys that could step up at receiver, and if not, then we're probably going to be tight end heavy. You're going to utilize Levy and Glines in the passing game, maybe Dylan if he can figure out his
right.
hands.
Dylan in the passing game is a huge, huge, huge piece, and again, all reports that we've heard really out of spring camp, and I mean, you're the guy who watched the spring game, so you can probably talk about it more than I can, although I don't even think did he even play in the spring game?
Dylan, no.
Yeah, which, is fair. But if we can get him and really make him multidimensional, that would be huge. CJ Lewis is 8 feet tall. I don't think people talk about that enough. So if he can put some things together and just kind of be your jump ball guy for AB, that'd be huge. Again, we know we have Kobe. Ben Glines, I think, will kind of fill in on that. You know, Mikey Walker, Jeff Smith, kind of playmaker, just fast as lightning role. And then again, strong tight end core, despite losing Tommy 12-inch, who is going to be Buffalo's favorite, like the city of Buffalo's favorite player by like week three.
Matt, I was in the New Jersey airport a couple weeks ago when I saw a Tommy Sweeney jersey. I walked by it, and then like a minute later, I was like, wait a second. That's 89 Bill Sweeney. And I didn't get a picture of it because I'm an idiot, but
that's a terrible
he's already, you know, selling jerseys in Buffalo. So
yep. And then again, to round out the tight end room, obviously we have Adrizzi and Garrison coming back, who, you know, both did some great things last year. And then we got Danny Dalton, Marshfield's own, coming home to BC.
Penn State guy, right?
Yeah, Penn State. He originally committed to the Eagles and decommitted, went to Penn State, played his 4 years there, and is now grad transferring back home. Shout out Marshfield. What are they? The Green Wave or something?
I couldn't tell.
They're definitely green and white. They're definitely green and white. I don't know. Steve Carell, Marshfield.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple good beaches there. You know, I think he still has a beach house there. But anyways, Danny Dalton, Marshfield guy, Steve Carell coming back home. So overall, I'm with you. I think on the skill front, I'm more optimistic than, you know, a lot of people are. But again, that's a theme that you and I are going to have, is that we're going to be more optimistic than the general public might lead on.
Yeah, and just going back quickly to the Tampa Bay reference. So get this, Matt. If Kobe White's playing the Mike Evans role, do we have a DeSean Jackson on this squad? So we'll look for one of the young guys. You mentioned C.J. Lewis, a couple of the other guys. I don't know their names. Galloway is one of them. Just a bunch of freshmen and sophomore guys. All we need is one
hey,
to
is
step
that Joey
up.
Joey Galloway's son? That's not Joey Galloway's son, correct?
You know, probably is, knowing B.C. and all we do is
he's from, I know he's from
guys.
Rhode Island, and like Joey Galloway like now is, I guess, a Bristol guy.
That would have come up before, I think, right?
Probably.
Yeah, we should have looked that up pre-show, Matt.
Yeah, so the Marshfield High School, they are the Rams. Their colors are green, but they're not the Green Wave.
Got it. Okay, well that's helpful to know. I'll jot that down for next time. All right, so switching gears on the defense side, you know, obviously we think we know what our offense is going to be. It's going to be run heavy. It's going to be Dylan. It's maybe going to be Tony Touchdowns finally making that leap. The defense is more of a question mark, right? We're ranked 128th out of 130 FBS teams in returning defensive production. You couple that with losing co-defensive coordinator Anthony Campanelli. They reassigned Jim Reed and promoted linebackers coach Bill Sheridan, who by all accounts is one of the top linebacker coaches in the country. He's well-respected even at the NFL level, but he's very much unproven as defensive coordinator. And by unproven, I mean he had two cracks at it in the NFL. He had one season with the Giants.
Did not go
and a couple great. Seasons with the Bucs, and yeah, the results were underwhelming there. You know, so while our D has been statistically very solid the past couple of years, you know, not quite at the Don Brown level of 2015, but they've been, you know, certainly reliable and they've kept us in games. You talk about
consistent, and that's really honestly all you can really ask out of a defense, unless you're loaded with, you know, studs, which to be fair, we have been.
Right.
But yeah, you just don't want a team that's going to, you know, basically put you out of it because you have a defense that's going to give you 40 points.
Yeah,
a game,
and they really stepped up. I mean, you talk about the Clemson game, you talk about Miami. I mean, beyond keeping us in it, those guys really, you know, helped. Well, we didn't beat Clemson, but, you know, they were obviously huge in stopping Miami's, you know, pass game. So, you know, I think the defense, while it has historically been solid, this could certainly be the year that things fall apart. So starting with the D-line, you lose, obviously, everyone. You lose Zach Allen. You lose Wyatt Ray. You lose Big Ray Smith. So it's really just Tanner Carafa there, who I think is one of the more underrated players on the roster.
Correct.
But he can't do it himself, right? So lack of depth on the line is a huge concern. And I don't know, we're loaded at linebacker, right? So I don't know enough about football to really speak on this, but is it a situation where you look at switching to like a 3-4 and to sort of, you know, utilize the depth at linebacker? I don't know.
Matt, I'm going to be honest. I always go ask Madden when I play defense. I pick my own plays on offense, but ask Madden on defense exclusively. So I'm not.
Yeah, I think
there.
You need a big guy at nose tackle. Like you need like a Vince Wilfork kind of guy, which Carafa is not.
Sure. Do we have any of those? Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so, Matt. So
no, I don't think we have Vince
this
Wilfork.
This is probably a dead end here.
That would be huge if we could. I mean, he's a Boston guy. I don't know if he has any college eligibility left, but that would be a big time.
Right. It would be. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe you work on converting one of the linebackers that, you know, is maybe fourth or fifth in the depth chart and make him a D end. I don't really know. You get a couple guys there. Brandon Barlow had a huge game when he had to fill in against Syracuse, 10 tackles. Marcus Valdez is another name. I don't know much about him, but he is an accounting major. So that's noteworthy.
It's definitely worth noting. The other guy, Matt, I'm excited about this guy, the grad transfer from Clemson, Richard Yergin. So he missed the last 2 years after a bad car crash. I think it seemed like he was just going to be done with football forever. But ended up coming here for his grad year, playing this year, immediately eligible. So the raw talent is obviously there. I mean, Clemson, they only get, you know, great football players. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I mean, you hope that after 2 years off and a major injury that, you know, look, if he's not all the way back, I don't think anyone would blame him. But I think that is a good guy, you know, even just beyond what he can do on the field. I think that'll definitely be a good, you know, leadership role. And I think the more grad transfers, the better in that role of things.
Yeah, it's nothing to lose, right? It's hit or miss. If you get something out of him, great.
And Carafa, by the way, I mean, we saw the pictures of him at media day. He's like a monster. Maybe it's because he looks exactly like the kid from School of Rock that we've well documented last year. But like, I always think about him as like a smaller guy, like kind of being a quick defensive lineman.
You picture him as like a middle school School of Rock character.
Correct, which would not do well in the ACC as a general rule. But looking at him compared to, he was sitting right next to the Clemson guy, like the exact same size as a Clemson offensive lineman. So he is an absolute monster, and I am expecting a huge year out of him. And I think that, seems to me that he'll be up to the challenge of basically putting this entire D-line on his back.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, Matt. I mean, Jim Reed's obviously a stud defensive line coach. I mean, you think about Zach Allen, Harold Landry, Wyatt Ray. I mean, mm-hmm. not only did Reed help develop these guys, but these guys have also been learning from some of the best. So you'd think that That's there's right. some sort of osmosis that takes place from that standpoint. So I'm hoping we can just kind of you know, replace those guys and not drop off too much. There will be drop off. You know, you're not going to have Zach Allen out there, you know, changing the course of the game on a play-by-play basis, but right. you know, the hope is that they're solid.
Yeah, and then, but I mean, again, I think overall you look like, so yeah, the line is definitely young. There's a lot of questions there, but we look behind them. The linebacking core, I think, is legitimately one of the strongest cores in the locker room on either side of the
Matt,
field.
This core has the potential to be the best we've seen since, like, Keith yeah. Lee and KPL. And Matt, I got some nicknames for you.
Let's do it.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, so there's a trio of linebackers, all of which could be absolute studs. This year. Will be studs, I have no doubt.
Yep.
All right, so we'll start with Sax Richardson.
Okay, pretty good.
Pretty yep. good. Isaiah McStuffy, because he stuffs,
oh, yeah.
stuffs yep. the run. And yep. then I got to work on John Lamont, but I got Lamont the SWAT for now.
Lamont the SWAT we've done before. It's not bad. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
it
requires him to sort of bat some balls down and things like that.
It's a very niche skill. Like, there needs to be opportunities that present themselves.
So that one's still a work in process.
No, I love it overall. I think, again, I think that that is going to be by far the anchor of the defense, which I think is a great group to have anchor your defense is kind of the center of the defense. David Hale has us as the fourth best linebacking core in the country, which again is huge because our other two up front and the defensive backs are like bottom two or bottom three. So I'm with you. We need that group to really excel and live up to their hype, and I have full confidence in them. Moving back further.
Well, hold on a second. I got to give you my breakout dude.
Yo, yeah. Yeah. Let's do it right now.
Indeed. Isaiah McStuffy.
Okay.
Matt.
I love it.
And I mean, it's kind of cheating at this point because he sort of broke out last year. He was second on the team with 85 tackles despite only really playing half the year. And his most productive games were against the top competition. Listen to this. He had 12 tackles versus Miami, 13 versus Virginia Tech, 8 tackles and a sack versus Clemson, 13 tackles against NC State. Zach Allen nicknamed him the Bloodhound, which we've now renamed him to McStuffy.
Yeah, I like ours better, I'll be honest.
Yeah, because of his ability to chase down the football, though.
Okay.
He is
but
banged
McStuffy
up.
Was... because he stuffs the football.
Exactly. You right. got it, Matt. You okay. got it. He has been out all spring with some type of knee injury, so that's a bit of a concern. But other than that, I think he's got the potential to be sort of the next great PC linebacker for sure playing on Sundays.
Right. And again, I think, like you said, the Bill Sheridan, you know, promotion is obviously putting a big focus on the linebacker. So I'm with you there. Moving to, again, the D-backs. Huge question marks really all throughout the secondary here. Obviously losing Harris, Cheevers, Dennis sucks. We have the Sebastian Bros, which we're thinking nicknames like something with the Bash Brothers because it's Sebastian. I think we can obviously figure
that's really
out
good,
there.
Matt.
I yeah, like we'll obviously figure out how to spell it and all that stuff. But I'll put Brandon as the most improved player on the entire roster last year. I think in the first couple games we saw him earlier in the year, he was a complete liability. And by the end, he was like a legitimate, you know, shutdown guy in the defensive backfield. So to me, he is, you know, by far going to be our, you know, main stay back there. Then we also have Mike Palmer, who many people say is just a modern day Sean Sylvia, you know, which is not a terrible, comparison to be made of you. Mehdi Alatrach, another big name that'll be doing a lot back there. So, I mean, we got names, we got guys who've been around the program for a little while. So it's not, you know, all hope is lost. It's just a question mark in the sense of, will the guys that need to step up, will they actually step up? Will they improve the way they need to improve? I don't think anyone's expecting them to live up to what that unit was over the last 2 years, which was, you know, legitimately one of the best secondaries in BC history. But again, like we said, just be good enough to kind of keep us in the games. Our schedule works out in a way that we're not playing a ton of huge aerial attack teams, obviously Clemson notwithstanding, but like NC State lost Finley, for example. So they're going to be untested at quarterback. There's not a lot of teams who are necessarily going to kill us over the top. Which, you know, obviously could be a you know, that's a good opportunity for us. That's a place that we're not just going to get, you know, completely exposed.
Yeah. Mike Palmer in particular, I remember we were down in Raleigh and we said, wait, who is this guy? Who's number, is he 19, whatever it is? He had a ginormous game, a breakout game against NC State. He had 10 tackles, a sack, as well as a punt block. And we had no idea who it was. So I like him to sort of have a, you know, to anchor that back line at safety. And then Tate Haynes is another name to watch out for. He had a big spring game, which probably means he'll do nothing in real life. But we'll see. But this is obviously the unit I'm concerned the most about. Not only losing Will Harris, who was the captain back there, but losing Campanelli, who, by all accounts, has sort of invented defensive back you. So we'll see if that trend continues, or if it was all Campanelli. Hopefully it's not. So we'll see what happens with that. But that's my one unit that I'm most concerned about.
Correct. Yeah, I think by far and away. But again, and we'll talk about it in a little bit when we kind of go into the courtroom. The margin of error in the ACC is so small this year. Really, all we need to do is just like slightly exceed our expectations in a couple of places, and we'll be in great shape. Again, we're going to rely on our linebackers. We're going to rely on our run game. You know, we're going to really rely on a quarterback and a strong offensive line. If, you know, the receivers can play a little better than maybe some people are expecting, or the D-backs can step up, we're going to be in great shape. I do want to make a note, obviously special teams has been a disaster, in the Adazio era outside of Mike Walker and his run backs, but, you know, especially the kicking game, et cetera. Phil Steele says we are one of the top, I think three special teams in the entire ACC. The guy is like a super genius, so I'm not sure what he knows, but we don't know what he knows, because I think he might be referring to a different Boston College, maybe the BC Lions and the Canadian Football League. But whatever he knows, there is information out there. I'm here for it. I just think that he is wildly incorrect and has been watching a different team than us.
We were dead last in the FBS last year in
Correct.
Field goal efficiency.
I'm
not sure how that stat works, but we're dead last.
We only kicked like 7 field goals over the course of the year.
It was 9. Only New Mexico had less attempts. We missed 5 point afters last year. Which
is
Buffalo,
actually good for us relative to where
actually,
we've been.
Alabama missed more than that somehow, which is wild.
They probably scored more touchdowns.
If nothing else, and we'll cap it here because, I mean, it's a question. Who knows what's going to happen with special teams, right? If nothing else, we have an electric slate of names when you talk about Danny Longman and the Tessitore, who's obviously famous.
Correct.
And now the transfer from Temple, who's, I believe, named Boomer High.
Oh, buddy.
That's a pretty good nickname potential there for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And then we got, again, talking on the recruiting front, how strong that's been. We got Ben Sauls coming in.
That's right. We're kicker guys now.
We're a kicker podcast. I think everyone knows that about us. We are in the Scoops game, and leader of the best kicking camp in the country reached out to us after the recruitment and was like, look, guys, like, inside scoop, this guy is the single best kicker in the country right now, heavily recruited by Georgia, ASU, a couple other schools, but he's coming to BC and he's going to be a lightning rod. He's got ice in his veins. He has the clutch gene. So maybe the tides are turning a little bit. We got the long man. So, you know, whatever. We'll see what happens. Maybe this is what Phil Steele knows. And maybe, again, trust in Phil Steele and his models. So we'll see.
That's right. I mean, the bottom line, so you have A.J. Dillon, and that's the one, right? And then you have what I'll call the big five. You got Anthony Brown, you got Kobe White, you got Ben Petrula, Tanner Carafa, and you got Max Richardson. After that, who knows, right? We'll see who's ready to step up, but those are going to be the guys that are anchoring our team this year, so we'll see what happens. All right, Matt, do you want to step inside the courtroom here?
I have been waiting for this for 7 months. Court is in session.
So this is a special edition Duteus Corpus. We will do a high-level breakdown of the ACC this year. And to me, Matt, it's pretty cut and dry, right? I mean, it's Clemson number one by a mile until
we play them, until week 8, yep.
That's right. And then I don't really see anyone else on the coastal side except Miami. And there's a couple trendy picks out there with Syracuse and UVA. But to me, that's pretty much it. So I think we're right up there with Miami as potentially number 2 or 3 in the ACC power. We have the potential to be if everything
sort
of goes
correct.
Our way, right? And that's, you know, that's a big if Dillon stays healthy, if AB makes the leap. But I don't know. I think that's how I see it shaking out this year. It should be pretty predictable in my mind.
Yeah, you mean pretty unpredictable.
Well, 1 and 2 are predictable, and then anything could happen thereafter.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, the bottom line is, and we said this earlier, but there are really beyond Clemson at the top and Louisville at the bottom, you could make any argument for the remaining order of finish in the Atlantic, and then the Coastal is just always chaos. Even Miami, I think, has a ton of question marks as well. Really, if you look throughout each team, they all have major units, just like we do, with very reliable units that you know are going to be strong, and then some with just tremendous question marks, lost a ton of guys, need to replace a ton of guys. So really, we're kind of in the same boat as just about every other team in the conference, which is a little unsettling, but also reassuring in the sense that, we're not way behind the eight ball and going up against a conference that has the likes of, Clemson, Alabama, pick other, 10 other top 10 teams. So it really is wide open for us. Maybe not necessarily the ACC, as a whole, but the opportunity to beat up on other teams with weaknesses and get us again back into the top 25 and, in the national conversation.
Yeah, my big hot take this year, and for those that listened last year, obviously I was sort of in love with Syracuse. I thought that they were underrated. I was a big Eric Dungy guy. I'm the exact opposite this year. I absolutely hate them this year. I think that all the hype is completely nonsense. Cuse fans have already deemed this new quarterback, Tommy DeVito, like the next Donovan McNabb or whoever else has been good for Syracuse.
Greg Paulus.
Because he was a big-time recruit that went to the same quarterback camp as, Tua and Jake Fromm and Ellinger and those guys. But I don't know, Matt. I don't know if you saw the Notre Dame-Cuse game last year, but
yeah.
Dungy went down. Tommy DeVito comes in, goes like 14 for 31 for not even 100 yards. No touchdowns, couple picks, takes a million sacks.
Yep.
Total QBR in that game was 1.5.
Yeah, he was awful.
They got absolutely smoked by a Notre Dame team that wasn't even that good, by the way.
Yeah, and he did look good against UNC, but I think literally so would,
my high school team, right.
Right. I mean, my dead yellow lab, who, to be fair, was a freakishly good athlete, would basically be able to go airbud on UNC last year. So I think that I'm with you. I think everyone is super, super, super high on DeVito, and I'm with you. It seems like for whatever reason, everyone is now just assuming that they are the heir apparent. If Clemson is to falter, they're the only team that's going to be able to beat Clemson. Which, again, if we're going and staying in the courtroom here, guilty or innocent, they are guilty of being overrated by unanimous decision in my eyes.
I think the whole league's guilty of being overrated. Honestly, I mean,
correct. BC, we are guilty of being underrated.
I would agree with that, and I think Wake actually has a case as well. Yep. They get a pretty good quarterback coming back that lit us up for 35 points or whatever it was last year. But I think that people are misplacing some of the hype on Cuse, on UVA. I think, Bryce Perkins, he's a nice player, but I think, he sort of came out of nowhere last year for UVA, and now you have an offseason, a game plan against it. UVA and Cuse and, even Pitt are sort of these fake good teams that had some success last year.
Right.
People think that they're going to build on it. I don't see it.
Yeah.
I think you kind of are who you are. Cuse in particular drives me nuts. And I'm going to be very vocal on Twitter. I continue to be very vocal on Twitter about it.
Right. I think that if you were to, in this offseason, take all the rosters as they currently are, but then completely just like change the schools where they're at, right? So like if you, or basically just obscure what team is what, I think the entire order of how everyone's assuming things are going to shake out would change. Like it seems a lot of people, but not a consensus, are high on FSU to be the number two team in the Atlantic.
Yeah, what is that?
Right. I mean, they were terrible last year. They had the worst offensive line in the country. And yeah, they beat us and that was an inexcusable loss. But, they're not overnight just going to put everything together and all of a sudden be back. Same with Miami. I mean, Miami, and you said that they're going to be kind of the runaway in the Coastal. I mean, I strongly disagree with that take as well.
Really?
The same way they did in last year.
They're going to be good with Manny Diaz, man. That defense lost no one. All they need is a quarterback, and they actually got it with Tate Martell, right?
Tate Martell sucks. Tate Martell's an asshole, and Tate Martell is he's the worst guy in the world. So I'm rooting so hard against him, and I really do think he's going to be terrible. He's untested, and there's not much that we have seen from him yet in a legitimate game. But yeah, I think overall everyone is assuming other Miami and Florida State they're going to be back. And then on the other side, I think it's everyone's trying to almost be like a little bit contrarian of like, oh, it's Wake Forest and UVA, we never picked them to be good. So this will be the year that there's chaos
default,
and they can jump in. Right. So it's
no
one has any idea. And I think it's just we're kind of picking based on laundry right now, which, again, if you go down the list, right, like Vatek, and we'll obviously talk about them more in a couple weeks, they lost like 95% of their roster in this offseason to the pros, transfers, dismissal, whatever. But everyone is still very high on them in the Coastal. So there are so many things that have gone wrong for teams. There's just question marks on teams. It just, I don't know, man. It just seems like everyone is guilty.
And we're ACC guys, but the ACC is going to suck this year. Way worse than it was last year. And it was down last year. I mean, there's so many programs that are just in disarray. Like the Blue Bloods, like Florida State ain't coming back yet.
Right.
Virginia Tech, they can barely field the roster, you know? So, I mean, until anyone says otherwise, it's really Clemson and then everyone else.
It really
does. Miami's got a shot this year to be pretty good. Probably a ranked football team in my mind. But outside of that, it's just anything could happen.
So I'm going to try to stick with some legal stuff here. Shout out to those people taking the bar over the next couple of days. I think this is around the time of year where that is underway.
Is that a once a year deal?
You know, Matt, I have no idea. We happen to know someone who's taking it, and I'm just assuming everyone is, because that's how kind of we're very pariahical. Yeah. But I think there's been a sweeping RICO indictment of all the good players in the ACC. And now they are kind of just gone, and somehow Clemson avoided that. And obviously we avoided that in a number of different ways. But overall, I just think there's been a lot of, what's the legal term I'm looking for here? Can you help me out?
It's a hung jury.
Correct. Yeah, I would definitely say that. Yep. And I think that, again, you and I are doing our civic duty right now and properly judging these teams. And I think we're the only one who's seeing it clearly.
All right. Sounds good to me. All right. Court is adjourned. And Matt, let's talk official Lot of Dudes season preview.
Sure. So I'll start.
Season prediction.
Yeah. So we're not going to go game by game here necessarily. Again, for all the new listeners, we have a new episode that comes out every week before the game. We'll break down what happened on the previous Saturday and then dive into the upcoming opponent. So that's where we're really going to get into depth of what we're going to see the following week. So just at a high level here, I think you really could bucket this out. It does seem like this is a consensus amongst BC fans, but we could bucket it out by the, I'll say either the sure or must wins, which is Rutgers, Kansas, Richmond, and Louisville. I'll put in that bucket as well. The tough games, you know, which if we lose them, no skin off our back, Clemson and Notre Dame. And really everything else is a toss-up to varying degrees, which is Tech, Cuse, Florida State, NC State, Wake, and Pitt. For me, like I think you say Pitt is probably the easiest one there. Cuse is harder at Cuse. But like we said, every single one of those has significant questions. So I think the bottom line is the margin for error is, you know, so incredibly thin, like I said. We have six toss-ups. If we are slightly worse than we expect in a couple, you know, areas, if AB does not progress as we expect him to, or if a couple other teams show up in a little bit, you know, better than maybe we expected, you know, it's not inconceivable that we could go 1-5 in the toss-ups, for example, and then all of a sudden we're at, you know, five wins pretty much on the year. But at the other side of things, we have an opportunity in front of us that if the units that, you know, we are relying on show up as we expect, and then a couple other units or a couple other guys take great strides, we really can, you know, get head and shoulders above the rest of the ACC outside of Clemson here, because again, it's just like it's just like a pile of mud right now, and we can, you know, basically win six of those toss-ups.
About those toss-up games, right?
Right.
I mean, four of them, really the key ones to me, are at home. You got Virginia Tech, Wake, NC State, Florida State. Pretty sure all those are at home, right?
Correct. Yeah, Cuse and Pitt are the only toss-ups on the road. Right,
and Pitt, it's not like that's like a road environment you really have to be that concerned about. They also lost everyone from last year, and they kind of sucked to begin with.
And I think at Florida State, week one is huge because, again, they have had a tumultuous offseason. Bud Foster's a good coach. They will put it together. What did I say?
Florida State.
No, I said Vatek.
Well, you can go back and check. You said Florida State.
Well, okay, having Vatek week one is huge because, again, they have had a tumultuous offseason. Bud Foster's a good coach, and I'm sure he'll put it together at some point this year. But even like we've seen at BC, like sometimes it takes us a couple weeks to get comfortable. So I think having them at home week one is you know, absolutely huge. But yeah, I'm with you overall. Florida State, NC State at home, both pretty big revenge games for this group. I think we all know that if we played those games three times last year, we probably would have won two of them. We just happened to play the one that we lost each time. And then Wake's always tough.
Virginia Tech to me is the scary one out of that group. Not because any logical reason. If you think about it, obviously we beat them on the road by multiple possessions. We've gotten better since last year. We have Dylan healthy. AB is making a jump. We have a new offensive coordinator. They don't know how to game plan for that. And they got worse, right? They had five wide receivers enter the transfer portal alone. We'll get to that next week when we do or whenever the Virginia Tech preview is. But anyway, the fact of the matter is anything can happen week one. You just don't know, right? So that's the one I'm concerned about the most. But, you know, Wake, NC State, Florida State, those don't really bother me, as home games. The ones that I'm really worried about, and by worried about, I mean the ones we'll probably lose, is obviously we have to call Clemson a loss for now. Although I will say, you know, it's not easy to replace three first-round draft picks on your D-line,
correct.
You know? And we hung with them last year, and we probably would have won if it wasn't for, you know, Dylan getting hurt.
Dirty
and Wilkins,
plays.
Wilkins didn't cheap shot AB, et cetera. So that's kind of hyperbole, kind of not. I don't know. We'll likely lose, in my mind, probably one of Notre Dame and Syracuse. Not because DeVito's good for Syracuse, just because it kind of sucks to go play at the Carrier Dome. And I don't know. We'll lose one of those, right? And then I don't mean for this to be a hot take here, Matt, but I'm terrified of one team in particular on our schedule. Can you guess which one it is?
I feel like you're going to say Rutgers, which is...
I'm terrified of Rutgers.
That it's like, I think Rutgers
I know.
It's been on the par as UConn. And
I don't know, man.
We'll get into it in a couple weeks, but first of all, we have so many guys from New Jersey on this roster. And
that's
like
what worries me.
Game for them.
So
they're
going to
play
me.
The biggest game. Like Anthony Brown's going to play the biggest game of his life in front of all of his friends and family,
our high school teammates.
Our
three New Jersey starters are going to play the game of their life versus a roster of
Matt,
New
do you
Jersey
understand, like, first
in front
of
their friends and family?
I don't know, but like they don't have friends and family that go to Rutgers games. That stadium will legitimately be over 50% PC
I would
fans.
Agree with you, except this is their Super Bowl. One of their sites claimed it as their most significant game in the past decade.
That doesn't matter. If my high school team was playing BC, it would be the biggest game of their decade as well.
I have like six reasons. Let me just list them off real
quick.
They obviously have no shot of like even being bowl eligible on that side of the Big Ten, right? So this is really for all the marbles when you talk about recruiting, Northeast rivalry, et cetera. They hate BC. And I thought before doing any research on Rutgers that they just got blown up by 50 to everyone. They actually kept it pretty close against Penn State last year.
Penn State sucked last year.
At Michigan State, it was a one-possession game. I know, but... Yeah, we're not going to beat Penn State is my point. If they kept it close against Penn State, transitive property. They were the worst statistical Power 5 offense last year, but they brought in, listen to the grad transfer quarterback they brought in, McLean Carter. Does that name not terrify you? Terrifies me. They're also coming off a bye. And then my last point here is there's a pretty good chance they know what's coming. When you talk about all the connections we have with Johnny Langan transferring down there, Campanelli, his brother, is like a tight ends
coach. You think Johnny Langan is sneaking in playbooks? That was kind of their big Trojan horse this whole time?
Of course. No, it wasn't the whole time, but you would be out of your mind if you don't think Chris Ash is saying, hey, what is Adazio? What's this play?
What's the new offensive coordinator do?
And it's a fair point, but I'm saying there's the risk of spilling all of Daz's trade secrets there. So I'm concerned about Rutgers. You heard it here first. If we lose, Daz probably is going to be on the hot seat immediately. Might get fired on the spot. I don't know.
I think it doesn't happen.
I'm not calling it a loss. I'm just saying I'm scared of that game.
I think especially with those the bucket of must wins, the first three that come very early in the year, Kansas, Rutgers, and Richmond, I think any of those are fireable on the spot, in my personal opinion. I think there is absolutely no excuse for any of those three games to not be very comfortable wins. Again, we'll obviously dive into significantly more detail as we get into, you know, each week's prediction there, but I think you are out of your mind. And as someone who, you know, if you are again staying on the Adazio train and you want to be around for a while, like ultimately we do, because that implies that he's winning, then you're just, you know, you're out of your mind if you think any of those are losses. Because
so I'm not calling it a loss.
It seemed like you just did.
I'm saying I'm very concerned about the game. And my season prediction, assuming we win, Matt, I'll just get into it. For the third year in a row, I'm officially predicting 10-2 this year.
Wow. Okay. I did not see that coming.
Officially, 10-2. We'll lose to Clemson probably, and we'll lose to one of Notre Dame or Cuse. If I'm wrong, it's because we lost to Rutgers, though.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying.
We're 10-2 or 9-3. Yeah. So, I mean, I think again, like I said, there's a thin margin of error, and if we can just slightly overperform, and if AB can be, you know, as good as I know he can be, you know, I have so much confidence, you know, in this team. I do like the way the schedule breaks out in that it gives us potentially a lot of momentum. I think there's a very good chance we start 7-0. Really, if you look at the tough games there, it's Vatek, NC State, and Wake Forest.
And Rutgers,
three of four at home before we actually go down to Clemson. I think there's a very legitimate chance at 7-0. Like I said, the Vatek opener, like we'll talk about in a little week, is one of the biggest games in my opinion.
That is the season. It is ginormous. And they're actually saying it too. I was reading up on a Virginia Tech website, and we'll get into it next week or whenever the Virginia Tech game is, but they're calling this one of the big games in at least the Fuente era. Because these guys want to get back on track and get back to the 9-10 win team that they're used to being.
Right. This is so make or break. Having this at home is huge. I think it will be a great crowd on, you know, even though Labor Day, I feel like we normally don't show up that well, but 4 o'clock game is perfect. So long story short, I'm very high on the talent on this team. And I do think because of the down ACC and a say, relatively ACC schedule due to the down ACC. I really do see, you know, 9 or 10 wins as a very legitimate possibility, just so we differ. And so there's a little, you know, stake in the game. I will say 9-3, though in my heart of hearts, I feel 10-2. I will go on the record as 9-3. But I think, you know, again, 7 wins needs to be the number again to, you know, not have Adazio fired. And I, again, for the sake of the program, I obviously hope we win more games, but that's not even a question. But yeah, I guess we'll see what happens. It could be a phenomenal year, but there's a lot of question marks.
Either way, that gets us probably to the Camping World Bowl down in Orlando, whatever Syracuse was in last year.
Nine or ten, yeah.
Yeah, 9 or 10 wins probably gets us in that range.
Completely agree.
Again, as you said, everyone's thrilled with all the Dazio hot seat talk goes away. He can actually bring in guys without being, you know, bothered by that type of talk. We got a ton of guys coming in. You know, we just walked down another top offensive line recruit. I mean, this program is going to be good for years to come. But I guess let's take it one game at a time here this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely with you. But like we said, just a few short days away from summer camp at the Fish getting underway. This is the most exciting time of the year as a BC fan, because optimism is just at an absolute fever pitch, which is really, you know, all we can ask for. And you know, then hope the boys can pay it off once they hit the field in what, 5 weeks from now?
That's right around the corner.
Yeah, so it's coming around the corner, and I think we're feeling good, and let's hope that stays rolling this season. Thanks again for listening. As always, again, don't forget to use MyBookie for all of your football needs this season, as well as baseball, and I guess, what do we have, golf and a couple? What else is out there to gamble on these days? Obviously, baseball.
Yeah, I've been hitting golf pretty hard. Golf's okay. Actually pretty fun to gamble on.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. So yeah, MyBookie is a source for all of that. Check out, you know, our guys at Armchair All-Americans for any of your other team podcasts, as well as our good friends over at Boston College 247 for all the hard-hitting BC recruiting analysis. They've been awesome really all summer as this BC recruiting roadshow has rolled on. And again, like we've said, we've been getting some awesome guys joining up as future dudes. So good things all around. Thanks again for listening. Look forward to catching back up in a few short weeks to talk Hokies.
It's a dude alert, folks.
Wondered how to say good morning in Italian, or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.